Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey, what's up, and welcome to another episode of Serious Issues, a weekly comic book podcast brought to you by King's Comics in Sydney. My name is Levins, my co-host name is Siobhan.
Hello.
And every week we read an rapidly increasing list of comic book issues and let you know which of the issues that you should be reading as well.
You can find every comic book that we talk about on the show at King's Comics at 310 Pitt Street in Sydney or online at kingscomics.com.
This week, all the world's magic disappeared, Saga made me cry, and there's now a new Quasar in town. Who's that? Who cares? We'll find out later in the show. Plus, we'll be reviewing, give me a little guide to all of the free comics that you'll be able to pick up this weekend, this Saturday, for Free Comic Book Day.
Holy moly.
Siobhan has been busy at work, as has everyone else at King's Comics, making sure there is a spectacular day of entertainment that involves us in some weird way as well.
Yeah, so. Yeah, we're going to be around chatting to everyone. It's going to be a really huge day.
I guess you could say it's a live episode of Serious Issues.
Yeah.
But there won't be an audience. Rather, we're just going to be doing little Q&A sessions with people at Free Comic Book Day on the day.
And you will also not be hearing it live, because that would probably be like unlistenable.
maybe we can work some weird magic. Yeah, oh, wait, maybe. We can't, because all the magic's gone in from the world now.
Jesus.
Thanks a lot, Doctor Strange. We'll also be at the very end of the episode, because I want to keep it as spoiler-free as possible. Siobhan and I read, finally, both of us read Dan Klaus, who has been putting out amazing books on Fantagraphics for years. His most recent book came out called Patience, a beautiful hardcover that may be his best book so far.
Mm.
So at the very end of the episode, just because it is if you haven't read it, I don't know, if you haven't read it, like, and the less you know about this book, the better.
Yeah, absolutely. I didn't even read the back cover, which I realized was then, like, massively in my favor.
Yeah, absolutely.
When I finished the book and turned it over, and I was like, I would have been way less surprised if I just looked at the blurb.
So, before we get to that, it's the very end of the podcast. If you have been thinking about buying this book, you definitely should. It's one of the best books of the year so far, and maybe one that you'll be talking about for years to come. So, Patience, a review of that at the very end of the show. But first, we'll kick things off, as we do every week, with our segment called First Things First. We will review all of the number one issues of the week. Siobhan, what should we start with?
I mean, we've been talking about it quite a bit already, so maybe we should just jump right in to Doctor Strange Last Days of Magic.
Right. So the big Jason Aaron Doctor Strange run, which we'll be reading, reviewing the seventh issue of later on in the show. It's all about all the magic in the world running out, and Doctor Strange and all the various magical characters in the Marvel Universe. What are they going to do with all this magic and all these people who are creatures of science hunting them down to kill them?
Mm. So this issue, I believe, is just a one-shot. I could be wrong. But it was a sort of anthology-style series of short stories tied together by a sort of through line of Doctor Strange's new sort of assistant, I guess, looking through his library. And it introduces us to some of the other magic users from around the Marvel world.
And so we have various creative teams on each story. The overarching kind of little narrative that introduces us to some great characters like Mahatma Doom.
Yeah, that was awesome.
Yeah, really, really cool. A magical monk who originally helped Dr. Doom, Victor Von Doom become Dr. Doom. And he was the last of the monks that survived, and he has decided to be the the evening factor in the world. If Dr. Doom is evil, he is the bringer of life.
Then he calls himself Mahatma Doom.
Very cool.
Very cool.
So that was written by Jason Aaron and art by Leonardo Romero, which I loved.
Yeah, yeah. Spectacular. Really beautiful art. And always colours by the brilliant Jordi Belair.
Then we got a Dr. Voodoo story. And since he is in Uncanny Avengers, which has been written by Jerry Duggan, Jerry Duggan writes a solo Dr. Voodoo story with art by...
Danilo Bayruth.
And, that was sweet.
Yeah, that was nice. I like that as well. I thought that was a really good fun... I don't know much about the Dr. Voodoo character, so I thought this was pretty cool.
Rick Remender did a very short-lived run that I liked quite a lot a few years ago, just before his acclaimed Uncanny X-Force run. He did Dr. Voodoo run. And then finally we get James Robinson, who has currently been... He's been running Scarlet Witch, so he has got a connection to the magic characters in the Marvel Universe. But he wrote a story called The Woo, which is about a character that I've never heard of before.
Yeah, me neither, but I was super into her. Yeah. Like, I love a good magic policeman.
Definitely.
Policewoman.
Yeah, so she's the daughter of a British policeman and a British magician lady. And
a Chinese magician lady.
And so she dies, the mother dies, and then her powers go to her daughter. But then she's a policewoman who fires magic bullets.
It's way cooler than we're making it sound.
As is everything we talk about in this podcast. This is a cool anthology of stories that don't really have a huge amount of importance in the future, but they're fun stories all the same.
Absolutely, and it's a good sort of, if you don't know that much about the magical side of the Marvel Universe and you're looking forward to the last days of magic.
Or the Doctor Strange movie.
Yeah, or the Doctor Strange movie, absolutely. This is a really fun, cool little one-shot to check out.
Yeah. And it wasn't the only anthology book that Marvel put out this week. This one came out of nowhere. I had no idea it was coming out.
Yeah, me neither.
Written by Ryan North, who's currently writing Unbeatable Squirrel Girl, and of course has a long background in comedic internet comics.
Mm-hmm.
This is A Year of Marvels. And so this is like a calendar, kind of reminds me of like the last Halloween.
Yeah.
The Batman stories that were, each issue was a different month. This is 2 months per issue. And each month being a story focusing on a different Marvel character. So we get a story focusing on Spider-Man on Valentine's Day, because his comic begins in February. And then we get the March story is Ant-Man and his crew in Miami for spring break.
And that story was actually written by Amy Chu. So it's written by two different... Yeah.
Oh, right. I thought Ryan did the whole thing. There you go. So that's crazy. That means we're going to have different creative teams on each month.
Which is pretty fun. I do enjoy that.
I love these kind of stories. I would have loved it a lot more if there was an overarching plot that links, even as a tiny one, that linked all these little stories together. And I don't know. Maybe that will happen.
Lighthearted little sort of monthly book, just to have a bit of fun with some of the Marvel characters, I think it was really good. I was a little bit like, I thought that the Spider-Man story written by Ryan North was fairly average.
Sure, but I mean, there were some good jokes in it.
There were some good jokes.
He writes a good Peter Parker slash Spider-Man.
Absolutely.
Speaking of which, we saw a very good Peter Parker slash Spider-Man on the big screen this week. Civil War.
He was so good.
Like, easily one of the best things about it.
We won't
go too far into it right now, but I mean, we both loved it, right?
Yeah, yeah. I definitely enjoyed it. I don't know if I like loved it.
I've recorded 2 podcasts about it already. my other podcast, Hey Fam, if you want to go check it out on the iTunes store, we did an immediate spoiler reaction podcast after seeing the premiere on Wednesday. And then I just recorded another one with a Melbourne comedian, Steele Saunders, who runs the Star Wars podcast, Steele Wars, who also loved it. So we kind of did even more thoughts on it. I just think it's such a great step forward for superhero movies.
Absolutely.
In general, and just showing the audience that you can balance, you know, up to 10 superheroes at once and give everybody a fair amount of story and character.
Yeah, I think it achieved that better than most event comics, you know, like every character felt like they progressed a little bit, and the characters that you were introduced to felt like you did them justice, you know, like I loved T'Challa, I loved New Spidey. I thought that there was some really good stuff in there.
Yeah, actually, like of all the characters, hilarious. Like I wasn't expecting this at all. The two absolutely best handled characters are Black Panther and Spider-Man.
Yeah, so, absolutely.
Very cool stuff. If you haven't seen that yet, it's definitely worth your time. And if Batman v Superman or even Age of Ultron left a bad taste in your mouth, this will get rid of that.
Yeah.
Flush it right out. It's the after. What do you call it when you? What do you? Mouthwash. It's the mouthwash that we all need. cool. Let's move on to. A comic set a comic based on toys that I never had when I was a kid. But
me neither.
It's still, you know, everything that was ever something is going to be a comic book at some point.
Yeah, absolutely.
In our lifetimes. So Micronauts number one.
And I believe I could be wrong because I heard this secondhand from one of the Scots at King's Comics.
If he's wrong, we won't say which Scott it is.
But he said that the Micronauts was actually used to be a comic book printed by Marvel. And so some of the sort of the Microverse, that was actually a Micronauts thing that then got taken in by Marvel.
Yeah, I think, and Rom the Space Knight was in, yes, Micronauts comic books as well.
Yes.
In any case, this comic is written by Cullen Bunn and out through IDW. There's a stack of artists and colorists working on it, which confused me a lot.
That
there's
was about, confusing.
There's like five different colorists working on this.
Yeah, there's like a breakdowns guy, four different finishes guys, four colors guys. That's confusing.
But it was a strange story. You said you liked it.
So you enjoyed go first. It. Well, it's sort of like they're kind of it introduces you to the Micronauts team, who are a team of sort of, it seems like they're kind of Firefly style space cowboy smugglers, whatever you need them to do. But it's a pretty fun team. I thought that there were some good jokes in it. I like the combination of sort of humanoid style aliens, one of whom used to be isn't some kind of pharaoh race of pharaohs, and you know, lots of cool robots and stuff like that. What did you not like about this?
Well, so I've spoken about how I don't really care about continuity that much in the past, but this bugged me. I feel like if this comic was a creator-owned comic, and was exactly the same, but I knew that there was nothing before it, I would have been fine. But because there are things that came before this, I was so confused. I was like, oh, wait, what does he do? I just kind of know. I feel like they didn't really introduce the characters or the concept of these characters well enough, given that they already have a history.
Right,
that
okay.
I mean, that's it. I know nothing about this history, so it doesn't really matter what happened before. But it just bugged me that I felt like a lot of things, like certain things are going over my head.
Yeah. Like, yeah, I mean,
the,
I guess
the big evil character that gets introduced in the middle of the comic that then doesn't appear again, I didn't understand where he kind of fit in with everyone else.
Yeah, and there were definitely a couple of, like, reveals in there that I went way over my head. But I thought they did a pretty good job of introducing this universe to someone who has, like, I don't even know what Micronauts are in terms of toys. I'm guessing little robots or something.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I thought it was pretty enjoyable. And I think that despite the fact that there were five different people working on it, that's got a pretty distinctive style.
Definitely,
and,
yeah.
Some really interesting, cool character designs, which I really enjoyed. Yeah, I quite enjoyed this.
Cullen Bunn's dialogue writing in this is really good.
Yeah,
that's
absolutely.
That's what makes it really enjoyable.
Great characterization.
So we will be reading issue 2 of Micronauts, I guess.
Yeah, I will, despite myself.
And also issue 2 of A Year of Marvels. And not very many number ones this week. The last one is Darkwing Duck, another old property. Nowhere near as old as Micronauts. Apparently, Micronauts were invented in like the 70s.
Yeah, I think so.
Which is
yeah.
crazy. So, Darkwing Duck was a Disney afternoon cartoon show when I was a kid in the early 90s, featuring spin-off characters from DuckTales, Launchpad McQuack. But Darkwing Duck is like, I guess, you know, one of the first kind of cartoon parodies of superheroes.
Yeah.
And especially Batman, like, you know, Darkwing Duck has he's the, you know, the I guess like the Dark Knight, but a duck.
He's the Duck Knight.
Yeah. And he, you know, he has a secret identity and but it also
Duck Cave.
It's goofy. It's really funny. He has like a big crazy rogues gallery. My fondest memory is the advertisements for all of the Darkwing Duck action figures when I was a kid, because they were actually really sick. It was cool seeing all of these characters in this comic again. And I haven't seen seen Darkwing Duck in, I guess, like 20 years. But my memories from watching this as a 10-year-old was all I needed to just fully immerse myself in this universe again. And it was written by... these guys have actually done a Darkwing Duck comic before, which I didn't read, but written by Aaron Sparrow and James Silvani, and it's out through Joe Books and Disney. This is just, I don't know, it's just was just really fun. If you have any fondness for Darkwing Duck, and I feel like, you know, everything else has made it come back, I would love to watch a bunch of Darkwing Duck cartoons with my son when he's a bit older. So yeah, it was very, very fun, and it's, you know, it's very fun and goofy and slapstick, and there's some great jokes in this book. actually had, I think, one of the first, my first introduction to comics was Disney Comics, actually.
Oh, yeah?
I had, like, Tailspin and DuckTales comics when I was a kid.
Yeah, so good.
Yeah. So that's Darkwing Duck. I'll definitely be reading number two of that, too. It was a fun trip down memory lane.
Yeah, and I'm sad because it actually already sold out at King's. Yeah. So I will be hopefully picking up a second print if they do one.
Yeah, again, if you want to pick up most of these comics, you can do so at King's Comics. It's actually where we're recording right now. We're surrounded by piles and piles of free Comic Book Day comic books in the back office, and we'll be talking about those later in the show. But first, we're going to get through all of the regular issues. Oh my gosh.
Holy moly.
This is a fun week of playing catch up with a lot of my favorite series.
Yeah.
Should we start with Saga?
Yeah, why not?
So, jump in. Everyone knows what Saga is, right? Brian K. Vaughan, Fiona Staples, an incredible space epic with so many different characters and plot threads and just tearing at your heartstrings at every corner. This arc, this is the finale, this issue 36, the finale of them, they do it. Arcs of six, and this is the end of the most recent arc, the sixth arc, for those who don't know how maths works. I feel like a lot of the criticism I've read of this arc has been a bit negative, that saying that this is a bit slow and not as much is happening as previous arcs, but I don't think I've ever been as satisfied in Saga as the... Spoilers for those who haven't caught up on Saga yet, there is a reunion between some of the main characters, and when it does happen, it is just unbelievably beautiful, and I was reduced to tears.
Yeah, this is this is one of those ones where, like, I think that Brian K. Vaughan can occasionally be a bit slower paced, and so I understand the criticism like that. But also, when you've read some of his other long running series, you have to assume that he's laying the groundwork for something.
Definitely.
You know? So I think it's okay when there's a little bit more slowness, and I definitely thought that this was going to be a real upsetting issue. And it was just.
It ends on one of the. Like, I feel like so many of the arcs have. The last issue is where they get you. They kill off characters you love, blah, blah. And so, another spoiler. I'm not fully going to spoil this issue, but no one dies in this issue.
No one dies.
And they make a big point of that, and I feel like it's a really, really positive thing to end a comic on a really exciting note of, and it's and in fact, it's all about new life.
Yeah.
And parenting and family, and which is at the core of what Saga's always been about since the beginning.
Absolutely.
So, yeah, I'm not afraid to admit that I cried my eyes out even just remembering this and recounting it to my wife later. The reunion in this is, and especially seeing it from Hazel's perspective, is just like, it was so well done.
Very emotional.
Is Brian Cavan, is he a father, or he just has like a cat?
I have no idea.
Because I don't know. I wonder if it was just me being a big sookie dad that made me like really, really emote with this. Like, it was powerful, man.
Absolutely. And I really loved the sort of development of Marco's mother, whose name I've forgotten. That was something really cool that I sort of didn't expect. That
absolutely.
I thought it was really, really, like,
yeah, I mean,
awesome.
And just when you thought the emotions weren't big enough, you have to say goodbye, but not for good.
Yeah.
So, look, I mean, what I think is the best thing about Saga and all sagas is that there are so many different threads that they can begin and look at with the next arc. There's so many different characters out and about, and I'm really excited I hope this book goes for...
Yeah, it just goes forever. Well, no, I don't think that.
But, you know, I hope we get
some point,
a nice
please.
Big meaty run. I mean, what the average... Absolutely. Average Brian K. Vaughan, I mean, I think Why the Last Man had 60 issues, Ex Machina had 50 issues, and he did maybe about 30 of Runaways.
Mm.
Am I forgetting anything major that he did a long run on? But yeah, I mean, I'm hoping this is maybe his longest run.
Yeah, absolutely. And it cannot be stated enough how brilliant Fiona Staples is. She's made this like unbelievably unique looking universe. And it's just half of the emotional.
Absolutely.
Impact definitely comes from her.
I just realized that there's a big crashing wave on the front cover. And I think that is a metaphor for the amount of tears you will shed in this issue.
So you should buy it.
Did you cry on any other issues this week, Siobhan? I'm setting you up with an impossible segue.
Yeah, I know. I was like trying to think of anything that made me cry. I don't think so. I'm fairly heartless, so nothing really made me cry.
Did you read Ultimates number 6?
Yeah, I did read Ultimates number 6.
So this is a Marvel comic that spun out of Secret Wars, probably the one that has the most connections to the Secret Wars massive Hickman event.
Yeah, absolutely. It's the only one that still feels like it's grounded in that universe. Everything else seems fairly far away.
Definitely. And it's written by Al Ewing, whose comics I certainly didn't dislike them, but I now, after reading a lot of these issues, I'm like, I need to go back and read all of his, like, Mighty Avengers stuff.
Yeah. I don't think that's necessarily necessary.
Right. Well, I'm really enjoying this run, especially this issue.
Yeah.
So this one we had a fill-in artist in Christian Ward, whose work in the past I haven't loved, but it's really suited to this story. One of the first things that this Ultimates team, which features, like, Black Panther, Captain Marvel, America Chavez.
The blue guy?
Yep, blue guy.
You know.
The blue guy.
You know what I mean.
One of the first missions I did was track down Galactus, one of the biggest cosmic threats in the Marvel Universe.
You remember that pink cloud from Fantastic Four 2?
Yeah, they tracked down a cloud and then they vacuumed him up. And so Galactus, they track him down and they end up basically turning him from a forever hungry destroyer of worlds. They turn him into the life bringer. And so he finds old planets that he has destroyed and brings new life to these planets.
And now he's gold.
I think this is really cool and I hope it sticks around for a while because he's still like a pompous dick.
Yeah.
And but he's, you know, a man with a mission now beyond just, you know, insatiable hunger.
Yeah, absolutely. Very interesting watching, like, Galactus have some character development.
Absolutely. You could say this is a one-shot. It has a beautiful beginning and end kind of bookends.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, I haven't been... Like, I've read a couple of issues of this run and I've been enjoying it, but I definitely missed the last couple. And I picked this up fully expecting not to understand what was going on, but it was a really nice sort of self-contained little issue, which, yeah, really good fun.
What's interesting is that we haven't seen this version of Galactus in any other books that he's been in recently. He's been purple in Squirrel Girl, which we should talk about next. That was fantastic. And Howard the Duck. But I feel like, you know, I'm hoping this is an iteration of this character that we see for a while. And one of the best things about this is he has a conversation with none other than the main reason Secret Wars even happened, Owen Reiss, the...
Molecule Man.
That's right. They have an amazing conversation where, like, you know, Galactus is fully aware that he has to be careful how he steps and how he talks because Owen Reiss could end him with just one thought.
Which surely isn't something that Galactus has to deal with super often.
Yeah, I just thought there was so much to love in this story, and I love Marvel cosmic stuff so much.
Yeah, absolutely, and I love any opportunity when there seems like it's sort of a problem that you can't solve with punching, and then they solve it with punching. That's my favorite thing. So in this, Galactus is like, the lords of chaos and order are like, you have to go back to being the Devourer. Like, that's your role in this universe. Like, you're messing everything up.
Are they Kirby creations?
I actually don't know.
They're so cool.
But they're just giant floating heads.
Lord Chaos and Master Order.
And instead of going, you know what, maybe you guys are right, or, like, just dealing with it, Galactus punches the lords in their faces. So, really good. Good resolution.
Let's talk about DC stuff. Should we talk about good DC stuff, or maybe good DC stuff? Let's go maybe first. Yeah. Dark Knight 3, The Master Race by Frank Miller, Brian Azzarello, and Andy Kubert? Andy Kubert, the good Kubert. Thoughts?
Are there any good Kubits left?
Ooh. I think on this book, I think the best thing about this book is Andy Kubit's work.
I definitely like it more, like, him sort of aping Frank Miller's style than I do normally enjoy Andy Kubit's work.
But you read this and then you read an issue of the all-new, all-different Avengers that Adam Kubit's drawing. And yeah. I can't read that. That's just unreadable to me.
Neither of them are their dad.
And I bet they're crying more than I did while I read Saga, if they hear that. This has been an interesting book. Of course, Dark Knight Returns is one of the, you know, most recommended classics to anyone who's gotten into comics for the first time. It's like always at the top three Batman books of all time.
Yep.
Frank Miller, of course, drawing and penning that one. Writing and drawing that one himself. He then did Dark Knight Returns... Again or something.
Dark Knight Strikes Again.
Dark Knight Strikes Again. The Dark Knight Again. And That one gets really, really bad criticism. No one seems to like it. I bought it on a digital sale forever and just let it sit in my library. And then when these current issues came out, which is about 10 years after the second one came out, I actually enjoyed them more than I thought I would. Mm. And so I was like, you know what? Maybe I will read Dark Knight Strikes again. And I did not hate it at all.
Mm.
Like it's like hammy. I guess, you know, Frank Miller's style is pretty easy to kind of pick now. So it was like, oh, I'm reading a Frank Miller book. This is fun. The art gets really, really bad in it at a few points. But which is why I like this again. But this is Master Race is very slow.
It is. I, for some reason, had convinced myself that this was like a 4-issue series. Well, so I was really like, man, they're gonna wrap this up really quick.
Dark Knight Strikes Again was only 3 issues.
Yeah, and now it's Yeah, this issue wasn't, like, incredible. I mean, it's got, like, Frank Miller's very, his politics come out very strongly in his work, and sometimes he can be the kind of writer who's a little bit extreme for reasons that I don't think are necessary in the book, like...
Mm-hmm. It's a very, very careful way to put it.
Thank you. So there's definitely problems. I mean, like, do we need to see Superman's daughter beating her dad potentially to death? Spoilers.
Yeah, haven't we seen Superman die enough this year?
Yeah, for Pete's sakes. But it was, yeah, this was a slow issue, but fine.
Yeah, I think the overall story, I'm only talking about it because this is the first issue that's come out since we started the podcast, I think. I know that there's something about this book I should hate it. I feel like I really should hate it.
I am enjoying it.
Because it almost represents everything I dislike about DC.
Absolutely.
Like, you know, this Frank Miller... unnecessarily aggressive version of Batman, Superman, a world gone to hell.
And Frank Miller definitely sort of ushered in that style of superhero comic.
Yeah, for sure.
His Batman books.
And Azzarello, I really like as a writer. You know, he has shown many times that he doesn't have to be unnecessarily dark at all times. But yeah, I don't know. I don't hate this book. I don't know what kind of review that is. What I love about it is the format. I love that you get the mini comic that you can then go back and read after finishing the main part of the comic.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, any reason that forces someone that doesn't normally buy, you know, standard issues to go to a comic book store and pick up this thing that you can't get anywhere else, I think that should be celebrated.
Absolutely. I think it's one of those books that, like, I have really enjoyed. I really enjoyed the first 3 issues. This one was like a little bit meh, but I'm definitely, I think, as a finished product, it'll be, like, more interesting to talk about, if it even gets finished. Like, he never finished All-Star Batman and Robin, so there's every chance that this could be yet another unfinished book, especially if it's supposed to go up to, I think, 12 issues.
Right, really? Crazy. That's going to be unnecessary as hell.
Massively unnecessary. I could be totally wrong.
I thought 8 for some reason, but I don't know what I'm basing that on, so...
I don't know what I'm basing 12 on.
Just quickly, another DC book I read this week was the 11th issue of The Omega Men. I've spoken about this every time I get a chance to. It's by Tom King with art by someone, Begenda. What's his name? Barnaby. Barnaby Begenda.
That's a good name.
Great name. And this is a big space opera about... you know, good versus evil, but are the good? Can you succeed as the good guys while only being good, or have you got to get your hands dirty too? Kyle Rayner, the Green Lantern, he certainly does. So it's a long running epic, but it's only 12 issues long, and we've got one more issue left. So I don't know, get on board now or just wait a month, and hopefully all the trades will be out. I think this is going to be one of the most interesting comics coming that DC have put out in the last 5 years, and I think will be one that people talk about for years to come.
Yeah, so. I'm really excited about Tom King being DC exclusive. I know that sort of locks him out of doing interesting stuff at Marvel, but if you can just get someone with an interesting voice on a book that matters, it can really influence the rest of the universe. So I'm really interested to see what he does on Batman.
Yeah, well, I mean, so the 3 books of his that I'm reading at the moment, Omega Man, The Vision, and Sheriff of Babylon, those are my like top of my pile. Like, oh my god, I can't wait to read these as soon as I see them. So, yeah, Tom King,
what a guy.
Save DC, please. let's move over to DC's competition, Marvel, Doctor Strange. We reviewed the one shot earlier, but the main comic by Jason Aaron and Chris Bacello on art had its part two of the Last Days of Magic storyline. It's very confusing talking about both comics, but it's not really that confusing. this is just a really, really cool story that I feel like Doctor Strange really needed.
Yeah.
You know, obviously we've got a Doctor Strange movie coming out at the end of the year. And there aren't that many Doctor Strange stories that someone who's been reading comics for, say, a decade can recommend people. Brian K. Vaughan actually wrote an okay miniseries by Doctor Strange in it a while ago. And I thought Hickman used Doctor Strange to great effect in his new Avengers run. But
it's another really good Doctor Strange book. Was there a Mike Mignola one or something?
Which I stole from you years ago, and I've never given it back to you. Yeah, it's a Doctor Strange and Doctor Doom.
Yeah, together.
That's awesome. A great book.
Going to hell to save Doom's mum.
Real fun. So, I mean, I feel like Jason Aaron, I wasn't sure what he was doing in the first issues of this series, but now that this event has come out and, you know, they've made an event out of it, but it's not, you know, it's not involving too many other crossover books.
Yeah, I think it'll be pretty, like, self-contained to the magic characters.
Yeah, this is a great book, and it's the best thing Chris Bacelli's done in years as well. He's so suited to this.
Yeah, I love this. And I like the villain in this series are called the Empirical, which I think is, like, a quite good name for bad guys, and I quite like them as bad guys.
There are very few bad guy names left in the world, so whenever someone comes up with a good one, it's
very exciting.
Very well done on their behalf.
And so this is the kind of origin story of these characters, and it's sort of set up like the classic Superman origin story, which is a little bit overdone, but whatever, it still works. And it's pretty fun, and so you see the Empirical as being a little bit justified. You know, magic destroyed his planet, and magic destroyed his family, so obviously he has to destroy magic. Really enjoyable.
Yeah, really good. A really great villain, and they are humanizing the villains in a good way as well.
Absolutely.
So I'm looking forward to see where this goes. Hopefully we get a science character out of it in the main Marvel universe.
Oh yeah,
that would be fun. So the biggest book that Marvel put out this week was the finale to their standoff Assault on Pleasant Hill event, written by Nick Spencer, drawn by Daniel Acuna, but finished by artists that don't normally do Daniel Acuna stuff, so it looks very different in parts to what Acuna normally does. This was like just a classic example of me getting excited for an event that you know is going to let you down, and then it kind of does, but you don't really care.
It just kind of peters off like so many events, and one could argue like so many Nick Spencer books.
No. Yeah. Superior Foes of Spider-Man is good till the end.
Yeah, I haven't read it.
I mean, if you follow any comic book websites, you'll have seen the news to come out of this. We spoiled it at the beginning. There is a new Quasar.
Holy shit!
But that just came out of nowhere.
Yeah,
because I mean, Quasar stopped being Quasar at the end of the big cosmic run by Dan Abnett and Andy Lanning like 5-6 years ago.
Yeah. No one's been calling for his return except for Vern. Vern at King's Comics loves Quasar. It's his favorite.
Well, so Quasar, of course, it's whoever holds the bands around their wrists. I don't know what they're called again.
I don't know. He's got magic bracelets.
Magic bangles. It's been different identities over the past, and now, for no reason, it's just some random girl from S.H.I.E.L.D.
Yeah, well, she's just been given. Also, I just Googled Quasar to try and look up a little bit more information. That was just science, and I was like, where is the comics?
I feel like there just wasn't enough done with this S.H.I.E.L.D. character to make me care.
Is she a character from the TV show?
No.
Oh, okay. Because I was like, is this some kind of stupid...
No, it's not an Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. No, MCU? Not at all. You've got that with, you know, Daisy...
Yeah.
Quick, whatever her hell name is.
Quake.
Yeah, that's it.
Terrible.
It's not that bad in the TV show, but it is pretty annoying when the comics mirror the TV and the movies. Of course, you've also got Steve Rogers now being young, and this is another disappointing event that has been used to set up a new status quo for Bucky Barnes.
Yeah.
So the same thing happened with Original Sin. That entire event existed to make him the new protector of the universe. That lasted for about 8 issues.
Mm-hmm.
Secret Wars happened, and now Bucky Barnes is going to be in the Thunderbolts with pretty much all the original Thunderbolts team from Kurt Busiek's initial run, which is kind of cool. The comic looks very 90s.
It really does.
But we'll give it a shot. It's coming out next week. I think, and also we've got this new character who is Cubic, who's going to be in Thunderbolts as well, which kind of gives it a different angle.
Yeah, that makes it a little bit more interesting, the fact that there's like...
a cosmic cube lady.
Cosmic cube child. This also, big spoiler, brings back a classic Captain America villain who looks like he... I'm like, this feels like one of those events that is just being used to set up another event.
The only thing is, it didn't feel like that until this point.
Yeah, absolutely. It was one of those ones that I was like, man, this is a really cool idea. Why didn't they build this more? Like, I would have loved to read so much more about Pleasant Hill and how that came
totally
about.
Agree. Yeah, yeah.
The daily life and all that stuff. But you could tell it was just being sort of pushed forward to as a means to an end. So good job, Nick Spencer, at doing something interesting with that.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Yeah, and also Red Skull being back at the end wasn't satisfying for me at all.
No.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, to get 30, to get 20, 20, 20, to get 20, 20, to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Because we got like a small glimpse of him in the Captain America issue.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, like, just like Quasar appears out of nowhere.
Yeah.
You have the Red Skull bringing back Hydra, but like... actually just like roping in like racists.
Yeah, like small town racists.
I don't think I don't think that's exciting. Especially, does he still have Xavier's brain in his head?
Who knows?
I don't know. I just didn't find that satisfying at all.
No.
This was a bit of a dud end to an event. Speaking of dud events, we're going to be reviewing or talking about Civil War 2. The free comic book day issue that Marvel putting out
Very
soon. Have we got any more comics that we want to talk about that came out this week? Some more Marvel. I read the latest Spider-Woman, which is, again, furthering the Spider-Gwen and Silk team-up. This is a really fun book, but then after reading Standoff and then reading that, I'm like, oh, no, is this just going to piss me off as well?
Yeah.
This little mini Spider event. It's just gonna. I feel like there's enough going on in Spider-Woman's world that she doesn't really need anything else happen.
No.
I just hope that she just gets home and then we just go, oh, cool, that was a fun little team up.
Ah, 4 more issues to go.
Yeah.
One thing that I did want to talk about, because I haven't really been keeping up with this, and it was such a fun issue, was Unbeatable Squirrel Girl, issue 7.
Oh, shit, we didn't talk about this, of course. Yeah, we said we were going to, and then we didn't, but then we did, so it's fine. Thanks, John.
So this is also being written by Ryan North of, what was that other one called?
Year of Marvels.
Year of Marvels and Dinosaur Comics fame. And he's been writing this since they relaunched the character. And this issue was just like fairly standalone, I assume. It wasn't part of any kind of ongoing story, it seemed to me, other than sort of general
day in the life of Squirrel Girl
continuity. But he wrote it as a choose your own adventure story, which is really fun. And Ryan North has actually done... he wrote a book called To Be or Not To Be, which is a choose-your-own-adventure version of Hamlet. And he's doing another one about Ophelia. So amazing. He's very, very experienced at this sort of thing.
He's very experienced at choosing his own adventure.
Loves good adventure and choosing it.
This was so good to the point that I wished that this was a comic that came out once a month in this format.
Absolutely. I would read this forever. There were so many jokes and it was so well told. And I love the, like, the cast of characters that they're building up for Squirrel Girl, like Koi Boy,
yeah,
a friend who's a fish guy.
And, like, there's a lot of meta jokes in here which, like, can be pretty hit or miss, but they are pretty much all hits this issue. Yeah, I feel like he was saving up a lot of his best jokes for this issue. And
yeah, absolutely.
It was just a joy to read, and I reread it again. And you can't, it's not really like a regular choose your own adventure. Like, it's pretty easy to read both. There's only two paths pretty much at most at any time, and it's pretty easy to read both of them.
Yeah.
And just kind of, yeah, take it all in like that. But yeah, it's a fun, really, really fun comic. When I was a kid, there was an amazing Choose Your Own Adventure Ren and Stimpy comic.
Oh, wow.
Which I later found out was written by Dan Slott.
Huh.
So a lot of my favorite comics as a kid were Ren and Stimpy issues, and Dan Slott pretty much wrote all of them.
Wow, I had no idea he used to write Ren and Stimpy.
Yeah,
that's crazy.
And I still have them all the original issues.
Oh, man. That's
awesome. They're super good. But that was an actual Choose Your Own Adventure. Like, you know, had you, like, turning to one page and then turning back to another page, and you got you caught in, like, an infinite loop of going back. Yeah, it was very clever, very goofy. Another really fun comedy comic from X-Men was X-Men, The Worst X-Man Ever, by Max Bemis and Michael Walsh. This is just, we spoke about it in the first episode of Serious Issues. It's just a really fun character comic about a fairly useless mutant whose only power is that he explodes once and then he's dead.
Good so power.
That's his power, and it's him trying to fit in the Academy and the Marvel Universe. This is kind of following his adventure on looking into the dark side of mutants.
And it's always super fun to have an X-Men book that's not caught up in the current continuity.
Especially
there's
when
no weird Inhumans or anything like that in this.
I've been reading Inhumans books lately.
Yeah, they're good.
I really like Uncanny Inhumans. I'm not enjoying all new Inhumans very much, though.
Oh, is that the Crystal one?
Yeah.
I kind of like them both.
Yeah, I don't. I just find that one so much more plotting than the
It's true. It is Inhumans. More sort of... Yeah, I'll agree with that.
So last few comics that we can talk about, is just playing catch up with, some of our favorite image series. I read new issues of Injection by Warren Ellis, Sex by Joe Casey, Sex Criminals, the double sex week, by Matt. You would be surprised how many weeks there are where these two books sync up.
No, I know.
And I get two books with sex in their title.
I've put them on the shelf and felt like a dirty creep.
Matt Fraction and Chip Zdarsky's Sex Criminals, Rick Remender's Low, and the most confusing comic to keep up with each month, or each quarter when it comes out, Ed Brubaker and Steve Epting Velvet.
Epting's Can't wait to Velvet. Read that in one.
There is no book on the shelves that screams more wait for trade.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
Like, it's beautiful owning the issues because the issues themselves are fantastic. You know, Steve Epting's art is amazing and so well suited to this story, but I just have no idea remembering who anyone is except Velvet.
Yeah.
This is a great story anyway. It involves her taking a certain president of the 60s hostage.
So fun. Oh,
super duper fun. Really great. But then, like, it's bookended by two things where I was like, huh? Who was that again? The big reveal at this. And this happened again in Sex Criminals. Like, the final page where it's like, dun, dun, dun.
These guys.
I was like, oh, I don't know who that is. I can't remember. And that nothing makes you feel dumber than,
not
knowing something that the author's like, huh?
Come on, remember?
Sex Criminals finally decided to push the plot forward.
Finally.
And we're really, you know, we're really getting back on track with the rollicking story now.
Yeah. And I was immediately back on board because I was a little bit like, in the last couple of issues of Sex Criminals. But the fact that they've started pushing it forward again was just so fun. And I'm enjoying it again already.
But again, the final page of this, I just have no idea about. I don't know who they are. I think I do.
God.
I think I vaguely remember these characters, but it doesn't feel like a massive cliffhanger ending to me because I was just like, huh?
Sex Criminals is one, though. Sorry, I stopped. I very obviously stopped listening to you then and started reading the letters page because that is like definitely get the single issues for the letters pages.
Oh, absolutely.
Because they are hilarious. It's the longest letters section, I think, in any comic. And it's so funny. They're so consistently funny.
Absolutely.
I love Chip so
the
much.
Sex tips at the top of each page. Chip Zdarsky is just a delightful human that exists in our world.
Oh, God, he's the best. Like, sex tip. Here's the thing about balls. Even we don't really know what to do with them. Best.
They actually released all those tips as like a little standalone hardcover sex tips called Just the Tips. So if you like dirty jokes, that is definitely a good one for you to get.
Absolutely.
A quick plug for one of my favorite comics that I don't know anyone else who reads, Sex. They just put out the 27th issue of this. It's been going for almost as long as Saga has. It's written by Joe Casey, who is a complete douchebag. Don't read his letters page. He doesn't even have a letters page. He has a rant at the end of every one of these issues.
How stressful.
Oh, God. He just seems like the most horrible person. but he's a great comic
Very mature
writer.
Of you to be able to distance yourself.
No, I'm an R&B and rap fan.
Right. Yeah. Okay. You kind of have to.
The art is by Peter Kowalski, who is... As much of a reason as the writing to come check out this series. It's a strange analogy of a post Batman world where Batman stops being Batman and just becomes Bruce Wayne. But it's also in a world where sex is prevalent everywhere and Catwoman is a dominatrix and blah 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 blah. It
sounds hot.
It's cool. I don't understand. You know, like it's become less and less about sex. There's still a lot of sex that happens in it, but. Yeah. You know, it's a great name for a comic.
Yeah, I feel like the name almost works against it because people just look at it and go, you know what, I just don't have the effort.
It's a good comic.
I'm sure it is.
They do a great job of juggling a lot of characters. I mean, like, just look at this cast list here in the front, which they've only just started to do with this issue.
Oh, wow.
You've got, 14, 15 characters in play. And you never really... begin an issue of this going like, who's that again? What do they do with this thing? It's always, even though there's been a gap in between issues, you're right back on track with it. Same as Injection, Warren Ellis. I had trouble remembering who all the characters were in the first few issues, but this has become one of my favorite books that comes out each month, and the humor has become really prevalent. There's one of Warren Ellis's best characters is a character called Viv, who is kind of like this very camp know-it-all kind of I don't even know how you would describe his job, but he's just like a classic Warren Ellis
nice.
Protagonist, really really great, and just knows way too much about the world that he's a part of. And finally Rick Remender's Low. I think I can 100% say that this is my favorite comic that Rick Remender is writing at the moment, and the story, he loves turning all of his stories on their head every few issues, and he absolutely has done that recently in this issue. It's just a great energy to it. The leads of this story are completely different and very, very fun to follow.
Hmm.
So that is this week's comics.
Woo! It was a big week.
Huge week, but not as big as this weekend.
Holy moly, guys. Are you prepared for Free Comic Book Day?
Are you prepared? I'm more worried about you. No, don't worry about everyone else.
We are so prepared. It is going to be a good day. I've decided.
How many free comics are there out this week?
It's actually the biggest free comic book day ever. I think there's a selection of 50 to choose from, which is pretty huge. And at King's, I don't really know what the deal is with everyone else, but at King's you get 4 free comics. So you'll get automatically when you arrive, you get the gold DC and Marvel books, which this year are a reprint of Suicide Squad issue 1 and an issue 0 of Marvel's new upcoming event Civil War 2. I wonder why they did that. That's crazy. So you'll get those 2 automatically, and then you can choose from the other 48, any other 2 that you like.
Yeah. I say this without bias. If you want to get the most comics in one hit, come to King's Comics. Because I know other ones, I won't name names, but the closest one to King's only lets you have one.
That's crazy. There's so many.
We're going to recommend some of the titles that we picked out. We've had a little skim through the many boxes of comics that you can get this Saturday at Free Comic Book Day. We're going to tell you which are some of the recommended ones from our end, and also let you know some of the things that you can get up to this Saturday at King's. What have you got your eye on, Siobhan?
Well, I think that Free Comic Book Day, it's a great day for kids' comics. I think that's... The purpose of the day is really to get kids reading comics, so there's always an awesome selection from all the kids publishers.
Definitely. I mean, it's definitely a day where you're like, oh yeah, that thing is a publisher.
Yeah
there are just publishers that you've like either forgotten about or never heard of to begin with, that putting out something familiar.
Yeah.
There's a lot of cool indie stuff coming out. I feel like we should go with the ones that are you should just get every year.
Yeah.
The Bongo Free For All comic, which is Bongo, of course, put out the Simpsons comics every single year. I mean, I don't read Simpsons comics. I haven't since I was in high school. But every year, this is just like so much fun to read. Just lots of great comic in jokes and I remember a few years ago there was just a one page like poster of all the Futurama cast as X-Men.
Awesome.
Which is worth getting it alone. This year we've got like a great little cutout Bender toy you can make if you want. I doubt anyone will make this Bender toy, but still quite cool. Lots of great stories, amazing art, and always like actually really great creators working on the stories, like Evan Dorkin, and occasionally you get like Mad Magazine artists and writers. It's super fun.
Yeah, always a really good fun issue. And excitingly, we will have a Simpsons comics alumni, Dean Rankin, visiting, hanging out at King's on the day. And I think almost all of the places are already filled up. But if you send us an email, we might still be able to fit you in. Because for $20, which is a massive discount off his usual price, he will be doing Simpsonized characters and Futurama style heads in jars.
Oh, sick.
Which is really cool.
That's massive. Oh, we should try and get one of the two of us.
Yeah. Oh, totally. All right. Good idea.
I'll pay for it. $40. The best $40 I'll ever spend. Of course, DC and Marvel are putting out their comics this year. Marvel is setting up their big event, the Brian Bendis written Civil War 2. We have a little read through this, but I feel like maybe we should talk about it next week.
Yeah, I think so. The Jim Chung art is great.
And we'll leave it at that. Marvel are definitely setting up their big event with this comic. They've done so in the past with their free comic book day issue every time. We also get a new peek at Captain America, the new Nick Spencer and Jesus Sayers take. So it's basically Steve back in the mantle of Captain America. Again, setting up some new Marvel comics, which is really great. This is absolutely what you should be doing with your free comic book day issues.
Absolutely. You know what I'm confused about by this new Cap thing? Is Sharon old now? Because in all of the promotional images, it's been like a distinctly aged looking Sharon. And I think that's really funny and mean if they're making Sharon age at like a regular rate in comparison to Cap.
I haven't noticed that. You know what I did notice? We didn't talk about it in the standoff. Oh my gosh. Yeah, you're right. I feel like that might be just Jesus Sace just drawing this poor girl old. But in the standoff issue, after Cap gets made young again, there's a panel of him just as an old man sitting at a table with everyone else.
I know! That was very weird. That was terrible.
I don't get it. I feel like this is just Jesus Sayers' art style.
Yeah.
All right, Sharon's still beautiful on the inside. You also get, in this Captain America book, a Spider-Man story setting up what the big event for the Spider-Man comics this year too, Dead No More by Dan Slott. So, two really, really strong, obviously, Captain America, Spider-Man, and the Avengers universes are the biggest things in Marvel, and you get peeks at what they're all doing this year into free comics through Marvel this year. Much better than what DC are doing. I don't know why. They've got one of the biggest things they've done since the New 52 is Rebirth.
Mm.
And instead of giving us like a little teaser comic for that or like a little kind of preview, they're just reprinting a Suicide Squad issue that I think won't have anything to do with Rebirth.
Yeah.
So obviously it's setting up the Suicide Squad movie coming out. And I guess I can kind of see why you would do that, but it just seems like a wasted opportunity to me.
And it's also it doesn't even really fit in with the Suicide Squad as you're going to see them in the movies. It is a weird decision by DC. They've done this last couple of years, like reprinted an old issue instead of showing us something new, which I feel like is a little bit of a waste of the day. You know, you're putting something in everyone's hands that they are going to want to read the next issue of.
Didn't last year they put out like the Long Halloween issue one is their
something
free comic
like
book
that
day?
And the year before it was like Justice League issue one, like the Geoff Johns run.
Some of the most owned comics in the world.
Yeah, very bizarre.
If you have to pick up a DC book this year, definitely
you do have to. It's one of the
go for DC Superhero Girls. We spoke about them in the past. It's all of your favorite female DC characters living in a dorm together.
It's adorable.
It's really, really sweet and fun and empowering and cool. This comic looks very, very bright and pretty and cool.
Yep, recommend it.
Get that one instead of Suicide Squad.
We can't do that. Suicide Squad is one of the ones that people will get.
Oh, sorry. Get that one as well as Suicide Squad. Bonus. There's a Drawn and Quarterly are putting out a really great compilation of Tom Gold's comics called Moon Cop. This is just a beautiful, even just the paper that it's printed on is fantastic.
Absolutely. And Tom Gold's comics are awesome. His book Goliath was really, really sweet. He's really interesting cartoonist, so it's really cool to get that.
Archie Comics are also doing the lazy option of putting out just the number one of the Mark Waid and Fiona Staples Archie series, but at least that's a really good comic, and the more people that read this, the better. This, I mean, it makes sense from a marketing point of view because this is like what the Archie line looks like now.
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
Is now. So,
and just introducing people to this series, I think, is a good idea. And it looks like you get a little bit of Jughead as a backup in there as well, which is awesome.
Oh, cool. With the preview for the next one too, which looks awesome.
Yeah, so sick.
What else have we got? We've got a Grant Morrison comic that... who's putting this one out? Graphic India are putting out. Grant Morrison puts out a secret comic every year that no one actually reads, and this looks like a preview of this of 2016's secret Grant Morrison comic. There's your obligatory manga comic, but it's printed out like a comic, even though you read it backwards, called One Punch Man.
It's a classic, so that's a really awesome one to see in English again.
The aforementioned Rom the Space Knight, another once Marvel property that has now... I don't know where it's going back. Is it public domain or no? IDW have purchased it. Of course, IDW.
Obviously IDW have.
So it looks like it's going to have a tie into the Micronauts universe. There's a number one of this written by Chris Ryle and Christos Gage.
That's pretty solid.
Christos Gage is about as capable a writer as Cullen Bunn, like perfect for this great little team up. There's a Pink Panther comic in which he's the Pink Panther. He's Thor. He's the Pink Panther.
And he's just got a
hammer. It writes itself.
It's amazing.
There's a fantastic looking compilation for all ages from
No Brow.
And this is this compiles stories from Hilda, which I've heard really great things about. Fantasy Sports, which is just the most beautiful art I've seen in any of the Free Comic Book Day books this year. And Akisi, which looks very unique and sweet as well. So if you're looking for great all ages comics, definitely pick up the No Brow compilation. Nate Powell's March is one of the most celebrated semi-educational, or completely educational comics. Basically kind of looks at important moments in Black American history. And there's a Free Comic Book Day issue that compiles some moments from all three of the March volumes so far, which if you haven't had a taste of that, or you've only read the first volume like I have, this is a very good one for you to pick up.
Absolutely.
John Lewis, Andrew Aiden, and Nate Powell are behind March. And finally, another one that's as consistent as the Simpsons one is every year is SpongeBob Freestyle Funnies for this year. Even if you're not a SpongeBob fan, there is a... Just for one page is the reason you should get it. James Kochalka, one of the best cartoonists of the last decade, consistently funny and just a big old goof, has written a Patrick comic.
Awesome.
Really fun.
Yeah, there's a couple of series, I think, that like the Bongo comic and the SpongeBob comic, you know you're going to get one at Free Comic Book Day every year, and it's a delightful treat every time.
Definitely. Yeah, so I mean, obviously there's countless more comics for you to pick up this weekend, and you should try and pick up as many of them as you can, because there's nothing better in this world than free comics.
Yeah, absolutely. And just to go on a little bit about what else we'll have going on that day, we'll also have our semi-annual sale, which is very exciting. So that's 20% off everything in store, excluding new releases, and 50% off back issues. We're also going to have Nicholas Scott signing, which is amazing. Dean Rankin, the aforementioned Simpsons artist, Mark Sexton, who worked on Mad Max Fury Road and Happy Feet and a whole bunch of other awesome stuff, and Tristan Jones, who works on Aliens at the moment, all going to be around, some doing sketches, some signing, so come say hi. We've got a couple of competitions running. If you're into cosplay, we have a group prize as well as individuals and under 12, so that'll be really fun. If you're coming down with your kids, we've got our kids' colouring table area. We'll have some awesome face painting and some fun activities for them to do as well. So it's going to be a really huge day.
And where is it?
310 Pitt Street, Sydney, King's Comics.
And Siobhan and myself will be hanging out all day.
Yeah, come say hi.
We'll be interviewing different people. We'll be trying to talk to the staff, provided they're not on the floor collapsed from having to sell so many comics. Looking forward to having a real big day. We'll be putting together like a special Free Comic Book Day episode in the future, so that'll be really fun. Before we talk about patience, just quickly, some of the issues that we're looking forward to next week. What have we got, Siobhan?
Well, I'm very excited. From Marvel, we've got issue 3 of Black Widow, the brilliant Mark Waid and Chris Samnee run. I'm really excited to see that. Also, issue 2 of Moon Knight, the Jeff Lemire series, which I think is really good. We've got a new number one Punisher series written by Becky Cloonan and with Steve Dillon back on the character, which is pretty huge.
Yeah, I love Steve Dillon's art so much. She's on so many of my favorite runs on Preacher and Punisher and endless great
and
stuff.
And he's so perfect for Punisher. Like, he suits it so much.
Yeah. And there's actually another Punisher comic launching this week, too. It's a Daredevil on Punisher.
Oh, yeah.
I don't think it's going to be anywhere near as good as a Becky Cloonan.
Trying to tie into the TV show as much as possible. Another thing that's really cool is that if you've heard us talking about the Star Wars, the Marvel Star Wars comics universe, and you want to check it out but haven't quite sure where to start, next week we've got a whole bunch of True Believers number ones, which Marvel put out. I think they're like $2 per issue, and they're doing the number ones of all of the Star Wars titles.
Yeah.
So you can pick up the Lando first issue, you can pick up the main series first issue.
Chewbacca, yep. Everything. Kanan. Yeah.
Yep, absolutely.
All
kinds.
Great place to start on all these different new comics for such a small amount of money.
Yep.
So there's free comic book day, and also there's cheap comic book day.
Yeah. Yeah. There's also Cinema Purgatorio, which is a new number one from Alan Moore, which I wouldn't normally care about, but it does sound kind of cool.
Yeah.
It's him working with Kevin O'Neill.
Yeah, and it's through Avatar, and there's lots of different creators. You've got Max Brooks, who did World War Z, is writing something. Garth Ennis, who's a frequent collaborator of the aforementioned Steve Dillon, he's doing a story.
And it's going to be an anthology-style thing, so should be really, really cool. I'm definitely excited to check that out.
And finally, there's an omnibus coming out of one of mine and Siobhan's favorite comics of all time.
I've only ever read the first six issues, so
I am
buying this. This is on my list.
Every omnibus I own, I've never read more than like three issues of, because I think it's terrible way to read comics.
But I sat on my floor and read my entire Teen Titans omnibus from start to finish recently. So yeah, it can be done.
That's cool. All right. Yeah. But, you've got to sit on a floor to do it.
Yeah, basically. Got to be limber.
Yeah, Gotham Central is the comic we're talking about by Greg Rucker and Ed Brubaker with Michael Lark.
Yeah, I believe.
Basically, you know, it's a cop procedural show, except set in Gotham with all of Batman's rogues gallery and Batman, kind of part of the cast, except no one on the force likes Batman.
Mm. It's cool. Where you get to know Renee Montoya and some of the other awesome characters.
One of the characters from the New 52, from the pre-New 52 that I miss the most.
Mm,
I think if they really want to knock it out of the park, do focus on Gotham Central more.
Yeah.
Like on the GCPD.
That vibe.
I want
absolutely.
That real.
I was really disappointed when they announced the Gotham TV series, and then it wasn't just exactly.
You watched any of that?
It nope.
Is such trash.
Yeah, I don't. When they had, I just can't be bothered. Like young Bruce Wayne and young Selina Kyle. Like, I don't want to see that, and I don't care.
We're gonna review Patience by Dan Clowes now, but before we do that. Just because I don't want to spoil it for anyone that hasn't read it yet.
Yep.
This is your chance to sign out. You can catch Serious Issues online, facebook.com/serious issues, or send us an email. We got a few emails this week, actually.
Yeah.
Seriousissues@kingscomics.com. We'll be doing some Q&A stuff next week, so we'll be saving all those up for then. Siobhan can be found online, instagram.com/SiobhanCBG, and I'm at Levdog, LEVDAWG. If you like what you heard, please do us a massive favor and leave us a review on iTunes. Because
why not?
The more people that see that we have a nice review, that people like us, the more people are going to listen, and that means the more things that we can do in the future. I run two other podcasts called The Mitchin and Hey Fam, and both of those have kind of got a nice enough audience and kind of good reviews that we've done big live events. We just did a Mitchin episode at the MCA on Friday night. And I guess the end goal for this, not even an end goal, a goal for this is to do Serious Issues live shows in the future with different creators and fun stuff like that. So hopefully that's something we can work towards.
Absolutely.
Cool. Well, thanks so much for listening. We're going to be reviewing Patience now. This is your last and final warning. If you have not read this book and you want to, turn off now. And for those of us who have, holy shit, this is the best book I've read in so long.
Wow, so good, so amazing.
What's your background with Dan Clowes?
He's not in my top 10, you know?
Right,
I have a knowledge of his work. I like Ghostworld. I think I've read Mr. Boring. A lot of his books I've read while shrink-wrapping them out the back room at King's Comics, so it's not been the most attentive read of all time. But I definitely have, you know, a huge amount of respect for his body of work and for what he does.
So he's all I read and Fantagraphics comics when I was in high school. I didn't do superhero comics until I was a full-grown adult.
You did it backwards.
I did Disney comics when I was a kid, and then I discovered Robert Crumb at a way too young age.
Oh, wow.
And that led to, I think the Ghost World movie came out while I was in high school, and I read the Ghost World comics, and I bought so many different issues of 8-Ball at different weird comic festivals that I would go to, and find like weird old back issues. And I pretty much bought anything with his name on it. I even bought like the Ghost World script book, just because it had like 4 pages of new Dan Klaus comics. And I definitely look at him. I have a fondness for his work for sure, but I definitely kind of, when I see his name now, I'm like, oh yeah, I used to love his comics.
Mm.
And I'm sure I still do, but there hadn't really been a new one in a long while.
Yeah.
The last 2 issues of 8-Ball are some of the best things he's ever done. They recently collected every issue of 8-Ball except the last 2 issues for this big hardcover volume, which is an unbelievable collection that you should definitely track down if you like having books that are beautiful on your shelf. But the last two 8-Ball issues that Dan Klaus put out were kind of standalone, complete full stories that were, you know, almost 100 pages, I think.
Amazing.
And Patience is his first book in, I don't know how long, like a long while.
Mm.
And, I mean, you're drawn to it because it's just a beautiful stock, incredible shiny cover, beautiful colours.
I mean, Fantagraphics do some of the most beautiful books. Like, if you really like physical printed comics, as I have to assume you do, if you like King's Comics, this is a real
absolutely.
Delight.
Absolutely. So I didn't know anything about this comic beyond it was just his first comic in a while.
Yeah.
And a friend told me that he'd got it like a week before it came out, and then it was awesome. And then I bought a copy and then gave it to a friend for her birthday, and she said it was amazing. And then I finally got one for myself. And I'm so grateful to both of those friends for not telling me anything about what it was about.
Yeah, wow.
Because this just defy my expectations.
I really expected, because I mean, Daniel Klaus is probably best known for doing sort of slice of life, small human stories.
He does. I mean, a lot of, like, David Boring goes completely off the rails at one point. And then like a Velvet Glove Cast in Iron is like just an absolutely bizarre book with, like, you know, weird deformed characters. And the last issue of 8-Ball was about a ray gun and a reluctant almost superhero. So he does write quite high concept stuff, but it's always in a very glum, kind of grounded, not so, you know, it's very far from your regular comics fare.
Yeah.
So this starts off in that same way, like it's a, you know, pretty stressful, harrowing tale of a young couple trying to get by on little money, and he has no job and she is pregnant. And then it just becomes...
It just flips.
It flips. It becomes a time travel comic.
Yeah.
And it's unbelievable.
It is so, so good.
It's like, I think that's... I don't really need to say more than that.
Yeah.
I just wanted to just express my absolute surprise of what this book was and how much fun I had reading it.
Yep. I was so, like, when... Because, I mean, I don't know how much we really want to spoil this, but when...
No, but we're assuming that everyone listening right now has read it.
Yeah. When the main character comes home and sees Patience, the lead sort of woman's name.
The title
name,
track title, of this book.
Yep. And she's dead on the floor. And that's where the story begins.
Absolutely.
And the rest is him just trying to figure out who did it, why it happened, how to fix it.
And it cuts forward...
Yeah.
The future. So I thought, once that happened, I thought this was going to be this like awful story about him trying to live his life with this having happened and, you know, being questioned by police and, you know, his life just being crap and blah, blah, blah. But instead it jumps like 30, 40 years into the future.
Yeah.
And
all of a sudden we're in 2029.
Yeah. And it's just this incredible sci-fi comic.
I hope 2029 looks like this.
I want blue hookers in 2029.
When will we get them?
And it's, you know, like, it definitely does a lot of time travel tropes, but it does it in such a great Dan Klausy kind of way that it, even though you kind of see things coming from a mile away and, like, you know that they're going to do certain things that you've seen in Looper or you've read in every time travel comic, when it actually happens, it's very satisfying.
Very satisfying.
And there are a few books that he's written that have, where he doesn't really do books that have that the end, like everything worked out.
Everything wrapped up.
And so, but he does this in his own beautiful way where you see the old version of the main character kind of, like, I guess not die, but he decays. And in doing that, he sees himself grow up having righted the wrongs of the past.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know. I just thought it was just beautiful. I was so moved by this book, and I hope Dan Klaus isn't like locking himself away for another 5 years to do something as good as this.
Absolutely.
But that said, if he doesn't feel like it, he doesn't have to. He's done many good things so far, and
yeah.
If this is his end game,
you can die right now. Yeah. That'd be fine with us.
We'll go investigate your death and come back in a time machine and save you.
It was really good fun. Really, it's a book that really stays with you. I kind of want to go back and reread it almost immediately.
You can't because it's mine.
I borrowed them from you. But yeah, very excellent.
Yeah. I think when we do a best comics of 2016, I don't know if we're going to be a dickhead and like divvy it up into like graphic novels, blah, 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 but like this is
already
top three.
Yeah. Another one that came out this week as well, which is definitely in my top three, is the first trade paperback of Nicholas Scott and Greg Rucka's Black Magic.
Awesome.
If you haven't been reading that, I really highly recommend you pick up the Image trade paperback. Image do this awesome thing a lot of the time with their first volumes where they do them at a discounted price. So you can get six issues for $16.95, which is really great. And it's my favorite series out at the moment. Like, I can't talk about it enough. If you like magic, if you like police procedurals,
if you're one of the best artists working today,
Nicola is like just absolutely killing it on Black Magic.
And she'll be at Free Comic Book Day this week, Saturday.
So I'm going to just be hanging around, being weird, telling her how much I love her.
Well, we can do a little interview with her.
Yeah, that'd be sick.
Awesome. You've been listening to Serious Issues. Thanks so much. We'll be back again next week. And we'll be presenting to you a very, very special Free Comic Book Day edition of Serious Issues.
Woo.
So hopefully we'll see you at King's Comics this weekend. And have a good Free Comic Book Day. Get a whole bag full of swag, as they say in the Old West.
We'll see you at King's Comics.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.